Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be talking with Jenny, who is part of the Oliver and Friends Farm Rescue and Sanctuary, which is located in Luther, Oklahoma. They advocate for all animals and provide education about compassionate, plant-based living. So let's get started.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
So good. It's a beautiful, well, I almost said it's a beautiful new year, but rocky start, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that might be a bit of an understatement, but we're making it.
Going to be all the more resilient by the end of 2021, I think.
It's very true. Very true.
We're so excited because, well, first of all, like farm animals are just like so fun. So we're so excited to get into everything that you do for sure. But I'm wondering if you can maybe go back and let us know how you got involved in animal welfare to start off.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've kind of been in animal rescue for most of my life. I worked for a good deal of time as a veterinary nurse. That was probably 10 or 12 years ago. So I kind of had like a basis of very minimal, but basic knowledge of animal and animal care. I worked in volunteered at other rescues before I started Oliver and Friends. So I kind of been a little bit of everywhere, if you will. I worked primarily with like dog and cat rescue before I started Oliver and Friends. So I kind of had like a little bit of knowledge about a lot of things to kind of get me started.
Yeah. I mean, where did you grow up and where were you working around this time? As a veterinary nurse, you were treating like a lot of farm animals or was it more urban?
I worked in a city veterinary clinic, a mostly small animal. And my ex-husband actually was a horse veterinarian. So I kind of had a little bit of everything. I didn't have a whole lot of experience with, you know, with like cattle or sheep and goats, but I learned pretty quickly.
Just got thrown right into it,
right?
Kind of.
So from there, how did you get more involved in like more rescue and sanctuary work?
So it actually started with my husband and I watched a documentary called Cowspiracy. And that kind of opened our eyes to animal agriculture and how poorly farm animals are treated as a whole, whether it be in the food industry or just kind of opened our eyes about, you know, how little protection these animals actually have, how little respect, you know, our culture and society as a whole has for them. So after we watched that, we actually kind of went down a rabbit hole of learning everything we could about the food industry, which led us to become vegan. Upon becoming vegan, I genuinely and deeply had a sincere, you know, feeling that I needed to give back more. Like once I realized, you know, the harm that I had caused so many animals as a self-proclaimed animal lover, I felt like there was just so much more that I could do to kind of show other people the truth and what these animals go through, and also just to give back. So originally I had wanted to just kind of volunteer at a farm animal sanctuary, but we're in central Oklahoma. And so the closest one at that point in time was St. Louis, Missouri or Houston, Texas. So there wasn't anywhere near me for me to even volunteer. So just kind of had my husband and I had a couple of weeks, well, really a couple of months of soul searching and thought, well, why not us? why don't we do it? So we did.
Yeah. I mean, those are so far away. It sounds like it was much needed for your area. That's wonderful.
Absolutely. There was a huge need. Oklahoma's kind of known for the cattle industry. You know, we've got oil and we've got cows. So it was a little bit of a scary venture to start. Oklahoma is not very, well, at least at that point in time when we started, we started in, I guess it would have been 2015. We got our 501 in 17. So at that point in time, I had never met another vegan. I didn't even know that there were vegans in Oklahoma. I didn't know, you know, kind of what the community pushback would be like. But I don't know, sometimes you just kind of have to make a leap and hope for the best. And luckily it worked.
Yeah, that's quite a leap. Oh my gosh, to be like the only vegan you know in Oklahoma.
Well, we learned pretty soon after we weren't the only vegans. We just hadn't met them yet.
Well, I was actually wondering, now that we're on the topic of veganism, so you run the only vegan farm animal sanctuary in Oklahoma. What exactly does that mean?
So there is another sanctuary called Sacred Ground. It's in Tulsa, but they don't do exactly what we do. They're not really taking in new animals. They're amazing. I absolutely adore them. But what we're doing is just a little bit different. And then there's another sanctuary in Southern Oklahoma that the founders are vegan. But what kind of differentiates between what we're doing and these other sanctuaries is that we're, in addition to saving farm animals, it's really important to us to do community outreach and just kind of education about plant-based living. So I feel like the two are very important and they go hand in hand. So it's important that whenever we are, you know, doing tabling events or, you know, if I'm doing any sort of speaking engagement, it's really important to talk about the veganism side of it, simply because that's mostly what we're saving animals from is agriculture. Mm-hmm. So the two are very, very important for sure. You know, besides the educational aspect, we're just the number of animals that we, you know, take in is quite large. We're pretty much kind of constantly getting requests. I probably get anywhere from 10 to 20 calls a day requesting placement for animal. Obviously, we can't take all of them in, but we do a lot of networking. So I think those primarily the educational outreach in our actual, you know, mission statement, and then also just the sheer volume of animals that we, you know, that we have a hand in helping.
That's so interesting. Of those calls that you typically get, so are these typically from like agricultural factory farms or who's reaching out to you to see if you can take in some of their animals? Because I just assume, I mean, we're so used to cat and dog rescues, but I really doubt there's all these stray farm animals that need you to pick them up.
Well, that's a really great question. The answer is yes to all of the things. We have a good relationship with our, you know, our municipal shelters and then also with the animal control. While there's not a ton of, you know, stray farm animals, it does happen. You know, we probably have, probably 5 to 7 sheep and goats that were actually found as strays. We help there's been several cows that we've helped place that were found as strays. But most of our animals do come from defunct factory farms, or a lot of times farmers will have, you know, an animal born that needs a little like human intervention. So a lot of our calves are special needs, or our cows are special needs. And they were born, the farmer noticed something was wrong, and then kind of fell in love with them as a byproduct of, you know, spending time with them. So once the animal was too big to live in their laundry room or whatever, they didn't have the heart to put them back out on pasture and slaughter them. So we get a lot of animals that way, just, you know, farmers having a change of heart. We do a lot of cruelty cases. So farm animals are one of the most abused and neglected, I don't know what you would call it, like a subset of animals. So they don't have hardly any laws protecting them. So we have quite a few animals that, you know, like William, who extreme abuse and neglect, that kind of goes hand in hand with sometimes the farmers fall in love with them and can't bear to see them slaughtered or they're literally confiscated by the law. So it just depends. That's where a good majority of them come from. And then we have like lots of pigs that come from FFA. These children raise these animals and love them and fall in love with them. And then not really thinking about what the whole purpose is at the end, you raise these animals solely for slaughter. People tend to fall in love with animals when they're around them. Kind of a novel idea.
Oh yeah. Obviously we know. And I know like one of our reps was part of FFA growing mm-hmm. up, because she was just in a rural area and that's just what all the kids were doing. And then it's like, as you grow older and learn more, it's a bit jarring, I think, to realize like what you're actually doing and what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned William, so I do want to make sure we touch on his story generally, because love William. He's like definitely won some hearts for sure.
Yeah, he's pretty special. I was absolutely blown away at, I'm actually going to cry. So you have to excuse me. I'm a big cry baby. The generosity and the outpouring of love and support that we've received for William, especially on the Cuddly platform. So we're beyond grateful to everyone who, you know, cared and of course donated. And it was a really a beautiful thing to see. There's a lot of times we don't get a whole lot of support for saving farm animals. We get a lot of pushback of, it's just a chicken or it's just a cow. Almost like, how dare you spend money to save an animal that so many people just view as food. So William's story, besides the fact that we also love William, it was a really heartwarming thing and kind of refreshing to see so many people care about him.
Definitely. Yeah. And so William is a cow who needed prosthetic after he was inhumanely went through an amputation. And just like the most handsome cow you've ever seen, like he is, he's a good looking cow.
He's very photogenic. He's a very handsome boy and he knows it. Yeah. William came from a farm in Pennsylvania. He suffered a broken leg as approximately 3 weeks old. And instead of receiving veterinary treatment, the farmer just cut his leg off essentially with a razor blade. And he stayed that way until he was about 7 months old. So once we finally rescued him, he had, as you can imagine, pretty severe angular limb deformities. And then he had to have a revisional amputation on the amputated leg simply because the bone was extraordinarily like sharp and jagged. There was pockets of infection. He had to have the bottom of his stump kind of the infection pulled away and new tissue kind of pulled back around. He's an absolutely incredible animal to survive all of that. And he has such a good attitude about everything. He's a very sweet cow. He's also very opinionated, but it's just been really neat to watch him figure out that, oh, you're helping me. Okay, well, I guess I'll let you.
I know. I just remember like the video I saw of him like romping through the field. And I feel like there's no better image than like a cow, like just like running through a field. It's so.
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to be doing for sure. And it was something that we weren't sure we would ever see. So finding a prosthetic for a cow is no small feat.
Mm-hmm. So punny.
It was really neat.
That is punny.
Oh, I didn't even mean to.
Is that in bad taste? I'm not sure. That was good. No, that was so good.
No, it was perfect.
No, I know. I feel like...
I wish I could take credit for it. Accidental.
I would take credit for it. We won't tell. No, I mean, I feel like too, the whole story just sounds so startling. And yeah, around your idea of like, it's hard enough to find anyone to make a prosthetic for an animal, but a cow, my gosh. So I'm so glad he was able to get that.
Yeah, me too. Shout out to Arc Ortho. Josh with Arc Ortho really stepped up and the first prototype that he made, you know, is working pretty great. So it's and due to the coronavirus, he wasn't even able to come here and like actually fit it. So our vet made like a casting and sent it to him and he did such a great job for not even actually being here to fit it. So everything worked out just really, really amazing. I feel like we just kind of skated on this wave of luck that super grateful for.
That's so amazing. I mean, it sounds like so many people came together to make it happen too. So that's amazing in itself as well.
Agreed.
So, I mean, William is just one example. So do you have the entire range of every farm animal that you could possibly imagine?
I think so. We have pigs, chickens, ducks, turkeys, sheep, goats, cows, obviously, horses. I'm sure I'm forgetting a whole lot. We do a lot of, in addition to a farm animal sanctuary and rescue, and we do a lot of special needs animals, like William. We do lots of special needs rescue with a multitude of animals, different species. We have, we actually have a large sulcata tortoise, about 70 pounds, that he's actually in a sort of wheelchair. He's paralyzed in his back legs. We have sheep and goats in wheelchairs also. We have a goose with a prosthetic. We've kind of found accidentally this kind of niche, if you will, of we kind of set out to do one thing and this is, you know, Oliver and Friends just kind of morphed into what it needed to be. So I never thought, you know, I'm going to start a sanctuary for special needs animals. That wasn't my intention. It just kind of happened that way.
Well, and I was curious too. So with all the animals that you're taking in, do they stay with you? Is it a lifelong sanctuary? Do you foster animals out? And if so, do you foster out like the farm animals or how does that sort of work? Because I was wondering that if anyone fosters a pig or anything like that.
That's a great question, actually. And I would say 99% of the animals that we take in do stay here for a lifelong sanctuary. There's mostly for their safety. It would be kind of the equivalent of, you know, if you lived in a culture that ate dogs, it would be really hard to feel really confident about adopting a dog out and ensuring their lifelong safety. So most of our animals do stay here, especially the special needs ones, because it's a huge undertaking. And sometimes, you know, your 800-pound cow doesn't want to put his leg on. And so you have to you have to be patient. We do also dog and cat rescue, again, only special needs. So those animals do get fostered and adopted out. It's really hard for me. Most of them do. I've kept a couple that I wasn't supposed to, but, and then occasionally, like if we get like a potbelly pig in, you know, we sometimes look for homes, but it just depends on the animal. Usually the animals that are primarily used in agriculture, it's just for their own safety. They stay here.
So lucky to have such a wonderful place to stay. And I know I like looking over everything that you do, like a totally like place where they can run free and really just like be an animal and not be confined to like some small space. That's an amazing thing in itself.
Yeah, that was definitely the most important thing to us, is that we just wanted the animals to be free just to be who they are. And, you know, in safety and no stress. And that's definitely the most important aspect.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I know you kind of touched on how things have been since COVID a little bit. Wondering if you can maybe go into that a little bit more. At this point, it feels like I don't remember life before COVID anymore. So I'm not sure if it feels just like the new normal.
I feel that in my soul. I really do. COVID has really impacted us. Not just, you know, obviously funding would be a big one. Another way that it's impacted us is, you know, before COVID, we had, you know, 2 to 3 volunteers a day helping with feeding and watering and cleaning. And after, you know, when COVID first happened, I don't know when the pandemic started. I don't know the appropriate term for when all of our lives changed. That was kind of a big thing to get used to, is like, oh, wow, now we're doing all of it by ourselves. Especially in the beginning, it felt irresponsible to have anybody together. We were concerned about our own safety. And I certainly, you know, couldn't live with myself if someone got sick here. My husband and I's personal workload increasing so much. I mean, we've always done, you know, most of the stuff around here, but you'd be surprised. I mean, watering the farm, just filling up water troughs, you know, it takes 3 hours. So it's like a full day. So we have not had any boredom during the pandemic. We've been very busy. So that was kind of a big change. And then we had kind of talked about in the beginning that, you know, one of our missions and something that's so important to us is community outreach and education. So, and part of the way that we do that is, well, did that before COVID was, you know, we would have, you know, open, what we called open barn days. So not to be confused with the petting zoo, we would just let people come in and just kind of walk around and see the animals. The animals were never forced to interact. That's absolutely not something we would never even consider doing. I feel like our, you know, our message about veganism and kindness and peace, it's a lot easier to get people to understand that whenever they actually get to spend time with animals.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in rural Oklahoma, so it blew my mind that there are people who have never actually touched a cow or hugged a pig, or farm hogs get, I hate that term, big pigs get very, very big. I mean, our biggest pig weighs almost 900 pounds. So, oh my gosh. That's something that we're used to. That's just sheriff. But to see people's faces when they're like, oh my gosh, you know, he's huge. That's something that I really miss personally. Just seeing people interact with the animals and see love fill their eyes. And just, I mean, you can almost see like the wheels turning, and it's like, okay, well, now there's a face or an experience whenever people are sitting down, you know, with a meal. And that's something that no matter how many times I talk about it or anybody talks about it, you can't replicate somebody's whole, you know, way of being, way of thinking, changing. And the animals are the ones that do that. So that's something that we really, really miss watching and you know, helping people kind of see that there is a different way. And I know the animals miss the people too. Not all of the animals are super excited about big crowds, but a lot of them are. So it's been kind of a big adjustment for all of us. We miss people.
Oh my gosh. That's what I was wondering too. I'm like, with so many special needs animals and being around people so often, like they must be a little bit more socialized than the typical farm animal. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's true. Being special needs, they're obviously, they just by very nature have to be handled more. So Matt, we have a sheep, a little lamb named Maddie, and she was, I wouldn't say feral, but close to feral when she arrived here, but she's missing a leg. So she has to be put into her wheelchair every day. And it took probably, I don't know, what would you say? Probably a month before she was really okay with being handled. But yeah, now she's like the friendliest one. She sees any person and she's like running towards the fence, like, pet me. So yeah, they get used to being handled pretty quickly. And then, you know, animals are smart. We're like their vending machines. It's like snack lady. So they get fond of people very quick.
I know you're like saying all these things about, you can't imagine someone who's like never touched a cow. And it's like, I don't think I've ever touched a cow. I think we need to go to Oklahoma, Sydney.
Oh my gosh. You have got to come and visit us.
I've seen them. I've interacted with a majority of farm animals, but I don't think I've actually physically touched a goat, a pig, a cow. Like I've never actually like, it is a strange thing. I don't think I've ever been allowed to get close enough to where I can actually, which I mean, is probably part of the problem is that people aren't being allowed to get close enough to actually interact with them to a point where, you know, they humanize them and they see them as actual animals versus, you know, food and whatnot.
Sure. No, I think that's absolutely true. I think that, I'm not going to go as far to say that it's intentional, but it kind of feels intentional. You know, I mean, I know I've talked to so many farmers throughout the years and they, in their minds, they have to kind of build that.
Yeah. That separation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I do believe that a majority of people are kind.
Yeah.
And who doesn't love animals? It's just like such a different, I don't know. It's hard when you make your living off of.
They have to desensitize themselves to it. It's what is it? A mental defense.
Yes, for sure. So yeah. I mean, even like, you know, whenever we get animals from, you know, from farms after they have fallen in love with them, sometimes it just blows my mind. It's like, well, I'm really, really glad that you love Clover, but you realize that all of the cows are just as Clover special. Yes. But all of these animals have, you know, the capability for this emotion, these emotions and this, you know, ability to interact. They're all this friendly. They're all this smart. They're all this sensitive. It's just, you know, we don't really give them, you know, a chance, you know, for us to really see and learn that. Which, again, going back to what we do, is part of why, you know, it's so important to give people an opportunity to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and I love what you're doing, like bringing people in and showing them this in like a setting that isn't so staged, like a petting zoo. Cause like I've touched a goat in a petting zoo, but it all feels it's not normal. You know, it's just like, there you are with a bunch of kids that are screaming.
Right. They're in a small pen or in some kind of tent or yeah, no, I think that's definitely different. I think at least in the beginning, a lot of people came expecting that. And it was like, no. If they don't come up to the fence, then you don't get to pet them. You know, they get to choose that for themselves. But I think it's also really magical for people to see them in like a natural setting. Our goats and sheep, they're in a pasture that has, you know, rocks and huge like boulder outcroppings. And, you know, it's large enough that they can be in another part of the pasture. You can't even see them. So it's also kind of neat whenever people are here and you know, I do a goat call. I will not be doing it on this podcast, but and they will come like kind of cascading down, you know, their outcropping. And it's a really neat thing to see. I think that's, you know, that kind of makes this place really special too, for people to see animals being their true selves. I think that makes, you know, a bit of an impact as well. It's certainly neater to see an animal, you know, a goat on a mountain than it is
and a tiny little pen.
As I was thinking, your farm must be quite large, right? Because I mean, it's not just goats. It's a number of animals and they all have that space. So how big is it exactly?
We have 21 acres and then we have a 7-acre lease, but it's not currently fenced. So 21 acres really isn't a huge amount of land. I mean, it is, but it's for the number of animals, it's a lot of it is just really doing good planning as far as, you know, like how to use the space that we have available, pasture rotating. And animals are pretty darn good at, you know, they may eat the grass, but they're also fertilizing it. So if you know how to kind of balance, kind of create your own ecosystem here with the animals, then you can utilize all of your space and you can, you know, comfortably and safely and in a healthy way, you know, keep the number of animals that we currently have on the space that we have. That was a really hard thing for us to learn, is like, how do we set this up most appropriately? So it's been a learning process in a lot of different ways for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, especially with you have an actual farm, so you have like plants, right?
Yeah, we do. We try to, in the spring and summer, feeding the number of animals that we have can obviously get very expensive. And we like the animals to be able to have not just, you know, nutrition, but also varying, you know, healthy diets so they don't get bored. I mean, you wouldn't want to eat the same, you know, one thing day after day. So we do quite a bit of gardening in the spring and summer. I would say about half of, you know, the fresh produce that we feed, we actually grow here, which is really neat. So that obviously feels really good to be able to kind of be self-sustaining in some ways, certainly not completely self-sustaining, obviously, but there's something really magical for me about, you know, planting a seed, watching it grow, and then feeding it to our animals. It's just a really neat process. And it's one of my favorite parts of it for sure.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. I love plants a lot. And trapped in Long Beach, where like if you see a tree, it's like a special thing.
Oh no, I would not picture that. My idea of Long Beach is not that.
Concrete jungle.
Oh, but you have the ocean, so I'm really jealous.
We have the ocean, yes. With so many animals and so many personalities, because obviously they all have their own vibe. Do you have a favorite like type of animal or like a favorite personality on your farm?
Well, you can't tell them, of course, but I'm especially fond. I wouldn't call them my favorite. It's hard to have a favorite. They're all so very different and all so similar. I think it's kind of a toss-up between cows and pigs. I absolutely adore cows. They are incredible, incredible, gentle animals. They're so smart. I also love horses, but I've never really understood the love affair with horses. That sounds really terrible. Let me finish before you judge me, world. I love horses. They're beautiful, but they aren't real great at thinking things through. Cows are so smart and they think about a situation. You know, a horse can get spooked by a leaf and a cow like actually is like, wait, let's problem solve this. Let's like think about this. I really love that aspect of cows, that they're, you know, they're calm, they're intelligent, they're incredibly sensitive, family oriented, herd animals. They're just gentle. I love them. Pigs are pretty amazing. They're geniuses. Pigs have probably been the animals that have taught us the most, just because they're massive. They are just tanks. I mean, an 800-pound pig, there's nothing you can do to get them. You can't force an 800-pound pig anything. I assure you. I really enjoy kind of learning how to modify my behavior to work with the animals. And it's so different with each species. And then, you know, obviously they're individuals too, but it's just I don't know. They're just amazing. Pigs and cows are probably my favorite. Again, you can't tell them I said that.
I know. You're going to wake up surrounded by like a bunch of geese or something. And they're going to be like, hey,
no,
no, my chickens are going to be so disappointed in me.
Well, now I have that image in my head too.
Yeah. They're all just going to be like looking in my windows in about 5 minutes. Like, we heard you. No.
Well, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that you do have an ongoing fundraiser for this little piglet, Davy. Is he doing well? Or let's maybe do an update.
Davey's doing great. He is growing so fast. He was a little touch and go at first, just because he was so young and he had pneumonia and he wasn't being fed properly. And he was taken from his mother so young that he didn't really know how. I know this sounds crazy, seeing as he's a pig, but he didn't actually even really know how to eat. So that was kind of a touch and go thing. And then he had some pretty severe digestional upset from switching from whatever it was he was eating before to a nutritious diet. But he's doing great now. He's quadrupled in size. When he came, he probably was about the size of a soup can. And now he's probably 15 pounds of chubby piglet. He's doing fantastic.
Oh my gosh. So cute. I'm such a sucker for all the farm animals. I feel like,
I know,
it's like you can see their little personalities pop right out. It's so amazing.
Absolutely. I think that they're such forgiving. They're just such forgiving animals. I mean, all animals are pretty amazing at, adapting and forgiving horrible human behavior. But I think that there's something that just really touches my soul at the farm animals' ability to do that. They're just, yeah, pretty amazing. I'm constantly blown away.
Well, and it sounds like what you're doing too is such creative work too, because you're being given these problems that no one else is really solving for, like finding prosthetics for all these different animals and helping them with their special needs. So it must be so fulfilling too, to be able to like use that side of your brain to do something like so life-changing.
I would definitely agree with that. In the beginning, it felt like so much more of a challenge than it does now. Like I said, in the beginning, I had never met another vegan. I didn't, and I don't suggest starting a farm sanctuary with a prayer. You should definitely do more research. Don't do what I did. But in the beginning, it was certainly more challenging because we didn't know anybody. We didn't know anybody. We didn't know what we were really doing. Since then, we've been, very fortunate to find, a community of other farm animal sanctuaries and to bounce ideas off of and to kind of learn from each other. One of our favorites is Iowa Farm Sanctuary. Sean Camp is the founder and director there. And she's been absolutely incredible. She's the one that helped us find Josh with Arc Ortho. It's definitely not just me figuring this out. We're very, very lucky. There's some amazing sanctuaries in the country. And it's really a beautiful thing to be able to work together. We certainly couldn't have gotten this far just figuring out ourselves. But yeah, it's also on the other hand of that, we're kind of in what I call a sanctuary desert. There's not anybody, we have like online, the ability to kind of interact online, but there's just not anybody anywhere near here. And I do wish that, we had a little bit more, I don't know what you would call it, actual community support, that we could go and visit other sanctuaries and, easier, and kind of see how other people are doing things. There's something, a little bit more fulfilling than actually going and seeing how someone else does it rather than just talking about it online. But, maybe someday.
Absolutely. I mean, I know that's, I think, part of the reason we started the podcast around just like animal welfare and rescue is so that everyone could talk about, okay, what are you doing and how is it going? Because it's so difficult for all these nonprofits to have to like reinvent the wheel every single time they need to start a program or do something different. Whereas if everyone's pulling their resources and they're like, hey, this worked really well for us, maybe it'll work well for you. I feel like that's such an amazing opportunity.
I think so too. And it's so mutually beneficial. I think you hit the nail on the head with like reinventing the wheel and pulling resources together. It's not always like that. I'm sure if you guys are in, obviously you are in the rescue world or the nonprofit world, there can be a lot of competition. And that's never really sat well with me. Like, we're not, how can we be competing when the whole purpose is to make the world a better place for the animals?
Yeah.
So that's been kind of a weird thing for me to, like I said, I was very naive coming into this. So I had to learn, I didn't know how any of this worked. And I was like, competition? What do you mean? what does that even mean? How are we competing? So I think that you really hit the nail on the head with that. So if you're listening, don't be competitive. We're all in this together.
Definitely. Absolutely. Well, and I know too, you have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have your degree in psychology too.
I do. I have a bachelor's in psychology. I have almost a master's, but I did. I stopped going to school whenever I realized that this is kind of what I wanted to do. It seemed kind of silly to get more debt when I wasn't going to be using my degree. Although a degree in psychology, I think, is never wasted. It certainly just helps you kind of just figure out, you know, how to interact with other people at the very least, effective ways of communicating, if you will.
Absolutely.
It must come into play so much, even just like in your, like interacting with animals and you're being so analytical, I'm sure, with like, okay, let's get behind why you did this. And
yeah. Yeah. If you could hear me talking to these animals, I definitely do that. I'm like, William, are we making good choices today? You know, I definitely talk to them like they're people. I mean, and they are people. Just because they don't look like us doesn't mean that they're not people too. But yeah, I definitely am guilty of having full-on conversations. Animal lovers, right?
We do have a few kind of like fun questions. And I'm not sure, I mean, obviously you have so many animals to choose from. So I'm not sure if you have like a sidekick that's like your main squeeze on the farm.
Yes. So I have Nene is our turkey. One of our turkeys. She's our house turkey. She lives part-time in our house. She's definitely my sidekick. She's very talkative and she likes to be involved in everything. I would say, I don't want to speak for my husband, but I think that his sidekick would probably be Zuri the goose. Zuri the goose is the one with the prosthetic. That goose is absolutely in love with that man. And he sees him coming and he is just a honking and a flapping and a running. So I think that would probably be his sidekick. Mine would be Nene and your Zuri.
Oh my gosh. It is kind of funny that they're both like fowls.
Yeah. Yes, 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 they are. Birds don't get near enough respect. They're very funny and very smart and very silly. I probably should have said birds were my favorite. They're all my favorite. Every time I think of a new animal, I'm like, no, that's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, whoever's right in front of you. Right?
That's right.
Well, so if Nene were president, what would be the first thing they did?
Free snacks for all. Every second of every day is snack time, for sure. Everyone should always have food in their hand. That would be her first decree of business.
Always about the snacks.
Always, always. She's the hungriest turkey.
Okay. And what is the naughtiest thing they've done?
I love this one.
Oh, gosh. James, one of our pigs, he's a rather large pig. He likes to bust through gates and let all of his friends out to run amok on the farm. That's a pretty common thing. Yeah, or Buttercup's a senior horse, has figured out how to open the door of the feed shed. So now we have to lock the door, literally lock the door from a pony.
Oh my gosh.
So she just opens it with her little lips. So it's kind of funny. It's like, where's the key? Why is this locked? Oh yeah, Buttercup.
I just love that. You're like, I have to lock a door from a pony.
From a pony, yeah.
Well, and you know it's because she's probably found the pony like in a food coma, like after eating too much.
Practically, yeah. We've had to have the vet out before. And like, yep, she ate some chicken food and had to have her belly pumped. So that's why there's a lock now. We take it very seriously. And she gets so mad. Oh, she gets mad. She'll just stand there and just kick the door. I'm like, Buttercup, you have already eaten.
As they kick it.
Yeah.
Just a feisty old lady.
She is very feisty.
I have to say too, I love all your animals' names. It's like Buttercup and Clover, and they're all so like, I don't know, they're exactly what like I would name all my animals. Well, if I could think of them in the moment, they're so perfect.
Yeah.
I think that we're pretty good at naming, but you know, not to toot our own horn or anything, but naming's very fun. Of course, we're kind of at the point now where I'm like, I'm running out of names. I can't think of anything else.
So we have one last question. If you had to pick one life motto, what would it be?
Be kind.
Solid one. I love that one.
I mean, it's just like, it's so simple, but it's something that you can just apply to any situation. That's so true.
Literally across the board.
I love it. I mean, everything you're doing is so amazing. And I feel like as soon as the world opens up, I'm like going to drag Sydney to Oklahoma with me. Like,
I know, right?
Please do. Please do. We would love, love, love to have you guys.
So fun. Well, thank you so much. Looking forward to all the amazing things you're going to do this year.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful and really honored for the opportunity to talk with you today. And thank you so much.
It was so wonderful speaking with Jenny. I don't know about you, but I've never hugged a pig, and now I need to. You want to learn a little bit more about Oliver and Friends Farm Rescue and Sanctuary, please check our show notes or our blog.
And remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's C-U-D-D-L-Y. Thanks, guys.